the Monroe Doctrine and Free Trade, the Final Conquest of Latin America, on today's Native Latin and Black Lost History Show.
Nobody really want fuego. Masayo will bring fire down worse than Waco. Buy you some coffee and Lego, your egos, your sandwich with mayo and two slices of mayo. Sitting at home on the couch playing Halo, but the Masayo ain't playing no wagos. Games, women and pants gonna get it. Flames, brothers keeping no commandments. Same, calling our armies of favor. Even with your NATO and soldiers with Dracos. Just tell me, how can you stop a tornado or better yet the lava from the volcano? They really can't, bro. They have to pay, bro. The most I say so. So in chase they go for all the wicked atrocities they owe. For all their wicked atrocities they owe. From San Diego to Trinity Tobago, I'm spitting these words so our Israelites they know. Keeping commandments the only way we grow, so we can defeat the nation Galileo. Nation Galileo, get it, cause they pale. He's bringing them hell for every bill of sale. So family, just examine yourself. When that fuego come, you don't wanna get left. Forsake your sin so you complete the test. Then you can have complete rest from all your stress. Fight to do right to your very last breath, or stay wicked and receive second death. Destruction of enemies is muy bueno. Make sure that's one of the things that you pray for. Into the kingdom, the sinners, they can't go. The sinners can't go. So we say, hasta luego, brothers really don't want fuego.
Sisters really don't want fuego. Nobody really want fuego. For the one that's too fuego. Fuegos really don't want fuego. Fuegos really don't want fuego. Nobody really want fuego. For the one that's too fuego.
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 Fuego. Brother, you don't want that fuego.
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 Oh, gosh. Why this happened? I did a rough cut.
I'm not a DJ.
I'm not a DJ. Yeah, all my settings were messed up. Who did the show last? I'm Spanish. The Spanish brothers. It's the Spanish brothers, bro. I'm telling you, because I'm logged in here. Like, this was lowered. This was lowered. I don't know how to do this stuff. And yes, I call them Spanish, not Northern Kingdom, because when they do stupid stuff like this, they're the Spanish brothers.
Dang.
All right. I'm on team No Silly Dove.
No Silly Dove.
No Silly Dove. I'm not a silly dove. All right? Shalom, shalom. Happy Sabbath. This is the Native Latin and Black Lost History Show. I'm Captain Yahshua.
Hey, shalom, most high, Christ bless. Captain Amariah.
Officer Zacchaeus. Soldier Jehovah.
Yeah. Got the A-team here today. The A-team. Right. Actually, you and Aparim should be the A-team. I think that goes better since your names both start with A.
I get it. Actually.
Ha!
What do we do?
Yeah. I'm feeling a little energized. I wasn't right coming in. I've been sick and whatever, and then you know, just like okay, I missed last week, right? And you know, I had a lot of stuff going on. I didn't want to lose my train of thought because we were going through things little by little. Of course, we're starting OD late. That's my fault today.
Hey, things happen. It's life. It's life.
That's my fault. All right. But we here. Let me see. How we sounding on Facebook? Everything good? Me scroll here. Yeah, I can't see.
Martin, okay.
Okay. All right. All praises. So before I go into posting my links and everything, let's do a little housekeeping. If you want to call in, comment, questions, 516-531-9797. 516-531-9797. If you would like to get more teachings, more understanding on your true heritage according to the Bible, you can go to www.israelunite.org. That's israelunite.org. And also, after Sabbath is over, if you'd like to purchase any Israelite-themed apparel, Bibles, whatever you can think of for the most part, go ahead and go to www.originalloyalty.com. Mm-hmm. Originalloyalty.com. And I'm going to go ahead and just kind of introduce the topic, and then I'll go and start posting my links. So we've been talking about, we started with Venezuela a few weeks back, and then we were talking a little about the School of the Americas. I wasn't able to really finish up on that. Well, that may come up, but we're going to circle back to that a little bit. But I had started reading in this book, Harvest of Empire, which at the very least, I know a lot of us, it's hard to have time to read the book. I haven't read it cover to cover. I kind of just go through topics that, you know, might seem like that catch my eye, and then I'll just kind of read a little bit and, you know, make my connection. But they have a documentary on DVD that I highly recommend. And it, it's called The History of Latinos in America by Juan Gonzalez. And The book is a little more detailed, but I like the way the documentary flows better. And, you know, the whole premise is that these caravans, the level of immigration, people coming from what is deemed as Latin America, is by and large a result of the destabilization, the imperialist efforts of the United States in the Western Hemisphere. That has destabilized the economy, that has supported, and we're going to read a fact later, upwards of 18 teams in Latin America, mid-1900s, 10 of them successful, and when they're not successful, they arm rebels, and they do different things. Yes, this is your government, taking the policemen of the world, and doing this stuff. So, We were talking about free trade and getting into it. On the last show, we're going to have a little bit of a shorter shower today, just to make the link start. So I hope to get to as much as I can. And brothers, feel as free as your scriptures in your head to hang it up. It's relevant to, sparks your mind reading. I'm going to address two things that I saw in the talk briefly. It's will about road doctrine. And I'll explain what that is. Free trade, which book here, Harvest of Harvest Empire, titles as Final Conquest of Latin America. And also, it also makes other documentary with that about the poverty. Mm-hmm. And, how you can have in Latin America, the countries that make up Latin America, the multitude of natural resources that the world requires. Latin America is like rest of most of the free world. Meaning, the rest of these countries will make you think that they got something that everybody else needs. That would be super wealthy, would be great, and that would be the way around, they would think. But that's where free trade comes in. So I'm going to go ahead and play some links if you want to say, Captain.
Absolutely. Revelation 17, verse 1. So give me Obadiah, verse 5.
All right.
We'll start with
first and foremost.
Revelation 17, verse 1. The book of Revelation, chapter 17, and verse 1. And there came one of the seven angels, which had seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters.
So the great whore, when you're reading on this chapter and the next chapter,
the great whore is referring to Babylon the Great,
which is America, right?
The word
America is nowhere in the Bible, and the Bible often speaks in allegories similar to the great whore is indeed referring to the United States of America. It says that it's set upon many waters because her influence in every single country, including Latin America. If people don't take on their policies, everything else, then they affect them by their embargoes and everything else. They put sanctions on these countries. So this is a whore that sits upon many waters. Now, this is one of the characteristics of the whore that sits upon many waters, which is why we see all the caravans fleeing Central America, South America, trying to come seek refuge here in America. Obadiah, verse 5.
Obadiah, verse 5. If thieves came to thee, if robbers by night, how art they cut off?
So now, a typical thief, right, here in the book of Obadiah, let you know that if a typical thief came to you by night to rob you, it said that they would take to a certain point, and then they would be fine, and they would move on. But not this poor that sits upon many waters. Read on.
If they not have stolen it till they had enough?
A typical thief understands that, listen, I got to get in and get out real quick, because the cop's going to come, all right? I need to get in, take what I can, as fast as I can, and get the hell out of here. But the whore that's going to find any waters, she runs the earth. So she could just steal and steal and steal, and no one's going to say nothing to her. Read on.
Would they not leave some grapes?
So a typical thief would leave something.
Let me read that again. If the grape gatherer came to thee, would they not leave some grapes?
A typical thief would leave at least something. Take and go, right? Read on.
How are the things of Esau searched out? How are his things sought up?
So Esau is referring to the who the world so ignorantly calls the Caucasian race, right? The Bible calls him Esau. There's a nation of Edom. They are the Edomites, right? The characteristic that this man has is that he steals until there's nothing left. He doesn't just take the fruit from the tree. He takes the fruit, the leaves, the branches, the tree trunk, the roots, the soil, everything.
Right.
That's why, like Captain said, Central America, Latin America in general, is the breast that feeds the world as far as these natural resources, but yet they're fleeing these countries because of poverty. They're fleeing because of the corrupt governments. Give me Deuteronomy 48, or 28, verse 46. 28, verse 46. And this is why. And this is why the Bible says that you can go to no other book, no other book. It can't be made with any other thing. We bring out books to help tie in the history and to give the sense. But the Bible answers all questions. Read that.
The book of Deuteronomy, chapter 28, verse 46. And they shall be upon thee for a sign and for a wonder.
The they is referring to the curses. The curses that Moses said would cut, that would come upon us as a people, they would be a sign and a wonder, meaning they would help identify who the 12 tribes of Israel are in these last days. Most of these curses we read, and we can easily see that Southern Kingdom, the so-called blacks, fit in these things, but the things that we're bringing out now is the history of Latin America and how they too are the Israelites, the 10 tribes of the Northern Kingdom. Read on.
And upon thy seed forever.
And upon thy seed forever. Meaning these curses will follow you wherever you go. No matter what level of status you think that you achieve, that's why Oprah can go over to Europe and then get arrested for shoplifting. Oprah's a billionaire. That's why LeBron James can buy a mansion in Brentwood and have the word nigger written on his gate. Mm-hmm. These curses follow us, and the same things with these Northern Kingdom tribes. Read on.
Verse 47. Because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart.
Okay, that's why I went on that. So these curses will be upon us forever, forever. And one of the curses is that the whore that sitteth upon many waters would come into our countries and take our natural resources and deplete us to the point where now we're fleeing our own countries to seek refuge from the same oppressor that's doing these things to us in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the scripture says that we watch for a nation that cannot save us.
Right.
It's all in vain. Only the Lord saves us. That's it.
Praises, all praises. Oh, gosh. I hate when, like, updates pop up on this. I don't need an update right now.
Remind me later.
All right, so good. So Esau, we spoke about the Monroe Doctrine. So I want to start there, right? So it says, what is the Monroe Doctrine? So as I'm doing research on this, I find this pretty interesting, and I've been watching the news. You know, Venezuela has been sparking a lot of national media attention. But by and large, like, understand that this is stuff that, I was looking at the news today, and they're doing live updates of, you know, they're shooting tear gas at protesters, and the borders are closed, and it's like, the borders have been closed. Like, it's not new news. They're making it seem like it's new news.
Mm-hmm.
And new news. They're making it seem like it's like it's current news. And this is stuff that, you know, I mean, that's the bubble that we live in, right? Like, that's the ignorance is bliss. So until, you know, your favorite news channel reports on it, it must not be happening, right? So the Monroe Doctrine, let me read a little bit about this. The Monroe Doctrine was a United States policy of opposing European colonialism in the Americas beginning in 1823. So this was its intent, because they were like, we're the big boys on the block now, right? Remember, they claimed their independence and, we're our own country, right? Declaration of Independence. And, you know, now you're on our side of the world. We're going to police the things that are here. This is our backyard. It stated that further efforts by European nations to take control of any independent state in North or South America would be viewed as the manifestation of an unfriendly disposition towards the United States. So they said, listen, if, Portugal, Spain, Britain, any of you try to come over here, and just because it's not the United States, but it's any of our neighbors, I'll say neighbors loosely,
mm-hmm.
we're going to take that as an act of aggression against us, right? At the same time, the doctrine noted that the U.S. would recognize and not interfere with existing European colonies, nor meddle in the internal concerns of European countries. This is not true because then you had the Spanish-American War, where they wound up basically taking a lot of this stuff back.
Right.
But they said, listen, if you already got a colony there, we ain't going to roll with you. But if you try to come in again, we're going to, you know, it's going to be problems. And really the motivation behind it, as we'll start to dissect it, is, you know, hey, this is our side of the world. You want to come to these other countries and get resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we should be benefiting each other.
Right.
So it says the doctrine was issued on December 2nd, 1823, at a time when nearly all Latin American colonies of Spain and Portugal had achieved or were at the point of gaining independence. Listen to this. I'm going to read it again because that went over people's heads. Because I know, right, you're listening, some of you, you're watching, and I'm just reading something, right? I'm narrating something, and you might lose some of the words. I get it, right? Maybe you're drinking something, you're preparing your sandwich, whatever it is, right? And you didn't hear that last part. So this Monroe Doctrine, which was basically a policy, a tenet, that the United States said, you come on this side of the world and try to take control of any independent state, we're going to take that as an unfriendly disposition towards us. This is the beginning of them saying they're going to be the police of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It says the doctrine was issued on December 2nd, 1823. What's significant about that date? At a time when nearly all Latin American colonies of Spain and Portugal had achieved or were at the point of gaining independence.
Dun, dun, dun.
So they timed this thing when these countries were basically going to be at their most vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
where what some would say, well, I mean, we're going to say they're conquerors. They had gained independence from their conquerors in Spain and Portugal. And they said, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to frame this by a doctrine, right? Give me the scripture that says frame mischief by law. And he says, we're going to frame this as a doctrine and say, hey, we're going to look out for you guys. Without having to necessarily go to war with Spain and Portugal. Get that scripture real quick, because I want you to think of this scripture as we go through all this stuff, right? And a frame of mischief by law, right?
The book of Psalms, chapter 94, verse 20.
That's it.
Shall the throne of iniquity have fellowship with thee, which frameth mischief by a law?
The throne of iniquity, just like the captain was bringing out earlier, is that harlot that sitteth upon many waters. It's the throne of sin. The mark of the beast is sin. It's their mm-hmm. policies. So it says the throne of iniquity. Read it again.
Shall the throne of iniquity have fellowship with thee?
Should the throne of iniquity have fellowship with thee? Should you be on board with, you know, its devices? You know, Bishop Nathaniel's been bringing out some great breakdowns and revelations,
mm-hmm.
talking about the politics with the two horns. It's a two-party democratic system, all right? That's all iniquity, all right? You read in Maccabees, we've gone over it before. That's a form of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Should those things, all right, have fellowship with you? Go ahead, read.
Which frameth mischief by a law.
That throne of iniquity, that harlot that sitteth on many waters, she frames mischief by a law. She makes and writes laws and drafts laws. And that's what the NAFTA is, the North American Free Trade Agreements,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's what we're reading here with the Monroe Doctrine. So I'll read a little bit more here on this, and then I want to go to the article. So it says, President James Monroe first stated that the doctrine during his 7th annual State of the Union to Congress the term Monroe Doctrine itself was coined in 1850.
All right.
By the end of the 19th century, Monroe's declaration was seen as a defining moment in the foreign policy of the United States. So this is, I bet many people probably didn't hear about this. Maybe if you took some advanced history classes in college or something, like writing intensive type of courses, they'll speak about this. But this is something that's typically kind of glazed over. All right. Actually, a lot of history that's taught in high schools and stuff like that, they don't delve very much into the history with Latin America.
Oh, absolutely.
I had to take separate courses in college, and I was very fortunate in to some respect, for as much as it's worth anything, the professor I had was relatively awake to the point where she at least acknowledged that the U.S. doesn't always have the best interests of Latin America. It's motivated by their own stuff. Mm-hmm. She was married to Esau, so that says a lot of where she was. But you know, I took this course, and, you know, she banged hard on the United States in that regard. And I picked up a lot of stuff there because at the time I was in the Bible. I mean, if I had taken this course mm-hmm. any other time, I probably would have had a different perspective in how I saw it. But, you know, I was in the truth for a number of years at that point already, and you know, I was woke, so to speak, right? So as she's going through this. And the type of stuff like this is not really taught, especially when it comes to America's history in this region, in this hemisphere. They focus largely on, you know, hey, we rebelled. You know, they create a bad guy. Remember the class that Bishop gave about the enemies, right, mm-hmm. and superheroes? Somebody's always the bad guy. It's just a matter of perspective. So they created this, like, to the other nations, we're the bad guy, which is why they've done the things that they've done to us to subdue our history and our heritage, right? But to the Most High, right, that's the ultimate perception. That's the only perception that matters. That's the only perspective that matters, right? We're the heroes of this story, and everybody else is the villain.
That's actually a good point. It's just like that Facebook video they had of them showing that the Karate Kid was actually the bad guy. It's the
right,
same thing.
Right,
it's all,
right.
It's all based upon perspective.
Perspective, right. Yeah. And it's funny because the reason that Facebook video is hilarious is because they're like, wait a second. This guy was kind of the bad guy.
Right,
like
right.
You know, all this time you're rooting for freaking Danielson.
Right.
And you should have been rooting for Johnny.
Right.
Sweep the leg. Right. And then now they got the Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
Right. And he does look like a little bit of a jerk, LaRusso, right?
Good show.
It is a good show. I can't wait for season two. But anyway, so that's a little bit of, what is that, pop culture, right? Nostalgia. So going back to this, right? The Monroe Doctrine became foreign policy of the United States, and it's one of its longest standing tenets, meaning it's one of the things that has permeated, that this is how, this was the beginning of when they said, we're going to be the police of the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is the beginning of where they said, we're going to be that harlot that sits upon many waters,
that's right,
meaning many nations, right? It started with this doctrine. It says it would be invoked by many U.S. statesmen and several U.S. presidents, including Ulysses S. Grant, the great Ulysses S. Grant, Theodore Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy, and Ronald Reagan. The intent and impact of the Monroe Doctrine persisted with only small variations for more than a century. Its stated objective was to free the newly independent colonies of Latin America from European intervention and avoid situations which could make the New World a battleground for the Old World powers, so that the U.S. could exert own influence undisturbed.
Dang.
But right in your face. Right in your face, they're telling you. And a few lines up, I had told you that that's exactly what their motivation was.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're reading down further, and it says that this whole intent of this was that they wanted to exert their own influence undisturbed by European powers and European influences. They didn't want to deal with the conflict of war. And it became more covert, more political.
And you can see it from the beginning how the idea came about in 1823, but the Monroe Doctrine wasn't even named that until
1850 is when they called it
right.
that. Right. Yep. So it says the doctrine asserted that the New World and the Old World were to remain distinctly separate spheres of influence. And the New World is meaning this side. The mm-hmm. Old World is Europe. You want to know what's interesting about that, too? Esau tells you themselves that 2nd Ezra 13, Arsareph means here. Because they say a man where never mankind dwelt. That's a new world. So it's telling you that is this, because you got dum-dums that say it's some side of that hemisphere of the
mm-hmm.
earth. No, that's called the old world, all right? It's
right.
referred to colloquially as the old world, just like this is considered the new world. So it said the new world and the old world were to remain distinctly separate spheres of influence, for they were composed of entirely separate and independent nations. After 1898, Latin American lawyers and intellectuals reinterpreted the Monroe Doctrine in terms of multilateralism and non-intervention. Multilateralism refers to an alliance of multiple countries pursuing a common goal. That's hip talk for NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And non-intervention is a foreign policy that holds that political rulers should minimize relations with other nations but still retain diplomacy and trade while avoiding wars unless related to direct self-defense. This is what breeded the School of the Americas. So this non-intervention policy said, which is really an intervention policy, it's, you know, it's all legalese, right? Like you talk to any lawyer and they'll tell you can litigate anything.
Mm-hmm.
It don't matter what you sign. It don't matter what's on there. Now, whether or not a judge rules in your favor is another story, but you can argue anything.
Right.
And this is the craftiness of Esau and how they go about that. These crafty devices, right? Can we read Psalms 83 where it says the crafty counsel? Because this is part of it. This is crafty counsel against the hidden ones of Israel, all right? And if you think about it, as you name the different nations in Psalms 83 as well, this is what's going on here. What you're seeing here, what we're reading in part, it doesn't encompass the whole crafty counsel, is the manifestation of what we're going to read in Psalms 83. Go ahead, read.
The book of Psalms, chapter 83, verse 1. Keep not thy silence, O God. Hold not thy peace. And be not still, O God.
Yeah, this is what we're asking the Most High to do, right? Come and exert that righteous judgment upon the earth. Go ahead.
For lo, thine enemies make a tumult.
Thy enemies is anything that stands or opposes itself against God.
Mm-hmm.
The enemies are these other nations outside of Israel. Let me go back a second. Outside of repenting Israel.
Here we go. There you go.
Because I'm thinking of my class topic for today. And my class topic today is going to deal with crafty counsel among our people.
Mm.
Because the Bible has many references that Israel also took crafty counsel against Israel. This is Psalms 2.
Mm-hmm.
Why do the heathen rage? People mm-hmm. imagine a vain thing. You back that up with Acts, and it talks about that even those of Israel were with the Jews and the other nations against us.
Maccabees,
which we're gonna go over that today, right? In First Maccabees, and it talks about Jonathan and everything else, right? So
that wretch.
That ungodly wretch. So this includes, right, the other nations. The enemies are the other nations and the ungodly Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, read.
For lo, thine enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up the head.
Because they hate us, even the ungodly of our people. And they've lifted up the head. Meaning what? They've taken their standard, their policies, and they've raised that stuff up. Right? Because some people say, oh, they've lifted up their head. No, they already lifted up their head. All right? And they've put themselves in this position of world dominance. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, read.
They have taken crafty counsel against thy people.
The Monroe Doctrine is part of that crafty counsel against Latin America, which where is our people? Okay, go ahead, read.
And consulted against thy hidden ones.
And we are hidden ones because right at that point already, we have forgot who we are, that we were operating in different frame of mind
mm-hmm.
after all the atrocities that were committed for almost 400 years at that point, because 1492 was the arrival of the conquerors. And this is 1823 when this doctrine came into place. So you're just shy of 400 years
yep.
at that point. We were dealing with that stuff, all right? Is that it on that verse? Okay, yeah, I'm not going to go into the nations that are on there. But if you read on, it talks about the different nations that all were confederate against us, right?
That's right.
So it says, after 1898, Latin American lawyers and intellectuals reinterpreted Monroe Doctrine in terms of multilateralism and non-intervention. In 1933, under President Franklin D. Roosevelt, the U.S. went along with the new reinterpretation, especially in terms of the Organization of American States. Now, I'm going to have to save that for another day, but I'll just read briefly what the Organization of American States is. I'm sorry, this stuff is like really fascinating. Like, but you used to be bored with history in school, right? It was probably one of very few people. When you say – some people say I love history, mm-hmm. they mean the History Channel, right? But you used to be bored with American history,
right?
And to an extent, rightly so, because the textbooks give you this trimmed down, dressed up version of American history.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah.
But American history, I mean, and if you do enough research, especially with your spiritual eyes on and understanding what you know in the scriptures, I mean, it's not really far-fetched what we teach in the Bibles if you have this understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But most people don't. They're more worried about, you know, Zion Williamson, Nike mm-hmm. shoe breaking, and the dude is injured, and he's supposed to be the best talent in 30 years, and the next LeBron-level type athlete
that
the Knicks got a good chance of drafting.
you know what's so funny about that, though, real quick? You know what's real funny about that? Is that I DVR'd the game because I was like, you know what? Let me check this kid out because there's all this hype about him. So I DVR'd it. I get home from work, and then in the first 30 seconds, he gets hurt. So I still haven't seen him play, and I'm like, oh, God. So I get – the Laura's like, no, man. You're going to use this 2 hours to go ahead and study, bro.
Yeah, man. You know, you're more concerned with stuff like that. You're more concerned with the NBA All-Star game, right? You're more concerned with
actors
botching their own
Jussie Smollett. You're more concerned with making memes about Jussie Smollett instead of reading this stuff. So anyway, I'm going to read the article after this. I'm going to stop at this part. But the Organization of American States, and maybe if the spirit moves me or another brother, we'll speak more about these type of things later on. It says the Organization of American States, or the OAS or OEA, is a continental organization that was founded on the 30th of April, 1948. For the purposes of regional solidarity, they were Confederate against us. Mm-hmm. They took crafty counsel on Confederate against us. Mm-hmm. And cooperation among its member states. Headquarters in the United States Capitol, Washington, D.C. So this world organization of this Western Hemisphere, of course, is headquartered in Washington, D.C. And there's a lot more that you can read on the Organization of American States. There's good points here with the Monroe Doctrine. I'm going to move on for that and read this article. And it'll speak a little more common tongue. So what is the Monroe Doctrine? A cornerstone of American foreign policy is once more under discussion. And, of course, they have a picture here of a bunch of
Edomites.
Yeah, I was going to say crack ass. No, he's not. But you have a bunch of Edomites sitting in the room pointing to a globe. It's actually a pretty powerful picture. We got to upgrade this show, I'm telling you, so we can show images on the Facebook thing. And, you know, he's pointing to the different things in the world. Anyway, it paints a strong image. So it says, last month, Juan Guaido, the leader of Venezuela's National Assembly, proclaimed himself the country's acting president. He has been recognized as such by the governments of the United States, which is the head, the most of Western Europe and Latin America. The incumbent president, Nicolas Maduro, whose second term started in early January after a fraudulent election last year, has described the upheaval as a U.S.-backed coup. On the day of Mr. Guaido's declaration, Mr. Maduro cautioned his supporters not to trust the gringos. You should not trust the gringos. You know what? That's biblical. Was it? Never trust thine enemy? Let's get it. Because we already established who the enemy is, right?
Hey, there was this meme that I saw the other day that was funny. It said that we have to build this wall because there's a bunch of murderers, thieves, and terrorists that are fleeing into the U.S., but they're just coming back from spring break.
That's good. That's heavy.
Like, oh,
they're coming back from spring break. Yep.
How
damn.
True it is.
Damn. All right. You got that?
Yes.
Go ahead, read it.
Sirach chapter 12 and verse 10. Never trust thine enemies, mm-hmm. for like as iron rusted, so is his wickedness. Mm.
So is his wickedness. It says, never trust thine enemy. Listen to the scripture as I read what Maduro is saying. And listen, like it or hate it or whatever's going on in the condition there, remember, we've gone over how there's a scapegoat. Mm-hmm. I'm not privy to all his policies. I know men are not infallible. And it's very possible that this guy is living deliciously while everybody else is suffering. But don't fall for the narrative that the United States is pushing and that the mainstream media pushes. I'm able to look at this stuff and read these articles and see the hypocrisy behind it a lot of times, right? So I'm just saying, look for yourself and see for yourself and understand no matter how terrible these things might seem, the importance of us showing you who's to blame is to go ahead and impress upon you and validate the scriptures, because people are suffering there to an extreme extent, and many of them still won't turn to repentance. Many of them don't know their Bible, so they can't understand it, to the point that we can go ahead and bring this message there yet. Listen, and the Lord, probably at the end of this, no matter how this goes, is going to mean this for good. It's going to get settled. It's not going to turn into another Cuba, not in these modern times, mm-hmm. and that's going to pave the way for us to go there and be able to preach the gospel there. You know, the Lord's will, if it be the Lord's will. So we'll see. So it says, read the scripture again.
Sirach chapter 12 and verse 10. Never trust thine enemies. For like as iron rusteth, so is his wickedness.
And so like as iron rusteth, so is his wickedness. Meaning it's a gradual decay and his wickedness will surely be revealed.
That's right.
And the rust, what? It weakens the integrity of any type of metals, right? So that they're not as strong as they used to be. So he says, Mr. Maduro said, don't trust the gringos. Never trust thine enemy. They don't have friends or loyalties, he said. Mm. This is why they hate his ass. They only have interest, guts, and the ambition to take Venezuela's oil, gas, and gold. They only have interest, guts, and ambition to take Venezuela's oil, gas, and gold. Get me the one where it says, and he names the places after himself and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then I want the smoother than butter.
The book of Psalms, chapter 49, verse 11. Their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever.
Right? That's the inward thought. That's the lifting of the head, that they're confederate against us. They've suppressed us. So they have the guts and the ambition. Go ahead.
And their dwelling places to all generations.
And that they're going to stay in power even once they're done. They're going to teach their children this stuff. That goes to show you that this thing is perpetuated in them. This is why you can say, oh, well, that was my great-great-great-great-grandfather. Why should I suffer for that today? Mm-hmm. Because of this part right there. Read that part again.
And their dwelling places to all generations.
To all of their generations that they're going to continue. They believe America and everything they've conquered is going to continue forever. Go ahead.
They call their lands after their own names.
They name it after themselves. You see it in the street names. America is named after Americo Vespucci. Right. All right. The scripture says this place, this whole side was called Arsareth. All right. Get me Psalms 55 and 21.
Psalms chapter 55 and verse 21. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter.
Actually, start at 20.
Verse 20. He hath put forth his hands against such as be at peace with him. He hath broken his covenant.
Never trust thine enemy. Mm-hmm. He puts forth his hand as such as be at peace with him. It's not always that he wages war, right? He can't be so close-minded and singular-minded and think that, oh, he's going to wait. He puts forth his hand in what? With different things, with foreign policies and so on. Go ahead, read.
The words of his mouth were smoother than butter.
The words of his mouth are smoother than butter. Multilateralism, right? Anti-intervention. Go ahead, read.
But war was in his heart.
But war was in his heart because that was the conception of the school of the Americas under those policies. And we've spoken about that, and we'll continue to move back towards that, Lord willing, as the show permits and as the topics come up. Go ahead, read.
His words were softer than oil, but yet there were drawing swords.
Yet they were drawn swords. So he says, don't trust the gringos. Mm-hmm. They don't have friends or loyalties, he said. They only have interests, guts, and the ambition to take Venezuela's oil, gas, and gold. The Monroe Doctrine was not about trying to help these independent nations. We read that plainly as we were reading it. The Monroe Doctrine, which is, they said, is still the cornerstone of the United States foreign policy to this day, all right, was about them being able to influence. And influence takes many manifestations. He said they only have interest, guts, and the ambition to take Venezuela's oil, gas, and gold. His warning echoes earlier Latin American responses to America's history of regional intervention. Such interventions were often justified with reference to the Monroe Doctrine, a declaration made by President James Monroe in 1823. Read the next verse in there, 22. See, because this is the part that's missing that we said. But before, everybody's going through all this, but nobody thinks to seek the Lord, right? Go ahead.
Verse 22, cast thy burdens upon the Lord.
The burden of what you're going through there, the burden of this betrayal, the manifestation of Lamentations 4:17, you are watching mm-hmm. for a country that cannot save you, all right? Go ahead, read.
Cast thy burdens upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved.
And it doesn't mean he's going to make you necessarily wealthy as a people in this present life, but he will sustain you. He won't suffer the righteous to be moved. All right? That's all I wanted on that. Okay, let me go back to the article. So it says, what does it say? It says, by 1823, many Latin American countries had gained independence from Spain or Portugal. The Russian Tsar had also recently claimed sovereignty over an area stretching roughly from modern-day Alaska to Oregon and barred foreign shipping there. Britain, which had extensive trade networks in Latin America and wanted to keep its European competitors at bay, proposed a joint announcement with America that would warn against further European intervention. So Britain was involved in influencing this Monroe Doctrine because Britain wound up after this country fought and rebelled against them, wound up becoming one of its staunchest allies,
mm-hmm.
which if you think about it, it goes to show you like it's it never really changed. It wasn't really independence. It was you know, that relationship is still there. It was sort of like, okay, listen, I'm going to be the head now, all right? You had your reign or whatever, but we're still going to roll together. And you see that to this day. Britain is like the number one ally of the United States.
Can I get a scripture for that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Psalm 64 and verse 5, because it's going to touch on how they're working together.
Psalms chapter 64 and verse 5. Mm-hmm. They encourage themselves in an evil matter.
They encourage themselves, meaning they work together. Uh-huh. They pat each other on the back. Yep. Oh, you're doing this? Okay, well, you're going to take the lead? All right, we'll follow what you do. We're going to follow your lead.
Go ahead. Right.
They commune of laying snares privily.
Mm. So they've done all this in private. A lot of the stuff that we haven't learned in history, they've already done it. And now we're just barely finding out. We're just barely learning the history and stuff.
Right, that's the snares.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. They say, who shall see them?
And they say that because they knew we was in slavery.
All right. Well, right. And they knew we were spiritually asleep.
And
who
sleep.
Shall see them?
Right.
We got these guys. We're set up. We've lifted up the head. They're going to look to us for their salvation. You're seeing that now, right?
Right.
All praises. So he says, so they propose this joint announcement that would warn against further European intervention. President Monroe, influenced by his Secretary of State, John Quincy Adams, right, opted to make a unilateral declaration to Congress in 1823. He said that the new and old worlds were to be two separate spheres. He promised that America would not intervene in European affairs and that any European attempt to – well, that was a lie because they jumped into World War II.
Right.
And World War I. So he says he promised that America would not intervene in European affairs and that any European attempt to colonize a nation in the Western Hemisphere – would be viewed as an act of aggression against America. It was the starkest expression of American hegemony in the region to that point and indicated a pivot away from Europe. I probably pronounced that wrong. I think it's hegemony. Anyway, and indicated a pivot away from Europe. For years, the Monroe Doctrine was more optimistic than realistic. America lacked the naval might to enforce it, so they were talking strong. But they remembered, historically, they needed the French Navy to help them overcome the British.
That's right.
That's not the case anymore, though. The America, the United States, is number one in every military as far as number of troops, all that stuff, right? And I think Russia's, like, right behind them. It said, it did nothing as Britain took the Falkland Islands in 1833 or when Britain and France imposed a naval blockade on Argentina in 1845. But as America got stronger, it started to flex its muscles. It helped kick out Mexico's French puppet emperor in 1867. And in 1904, President Theodore Roosevelt expanded the remit of the doctrine with a corollary stating that America could exercise international police power. International police power in the hemisphere. Basically... this is ours.
Right. This is our
We're going to roll here. Mm-hmm. By the 1930s, America had annexed Puerto Rico, occupied Cuba, and encouraged a rebellion in Panama after the country's Colombian rulers rejected a proposal for an interoceanic canal. And this was the Panama Deception. Mm-hmm. So there's another great documentary in that you can go ahead and make the parallels and make the connections to what we're reading here. All right. During the Cold War, the Monroe Doctrine was used as a broader justification for protecting America's national interests in its backyard. In 1962, President John F. Kennedy referred to the doctrine to justify the trade embargo against Cuba, the sanctions, right? If you don't do what they say, you won't be able to buy and sell and all that. And we've spoken at length about Cuba and what the impact has been on that. On similar grounds, America has backed 18 attempts at regime change in Latin America since 1945, 10 of which succeeded and provided arms and technical assistance to military groups in the civil wars of Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and Nicaragua. So if they weren't, so that whole non-intervention thing is BS. Like I told you, they've done it in different ways. And he's not mentioning it here, but they did this via the School of the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, listen, we're going to train this. They've backed 18 attempts at regime change. 10 were successful. And some of these guys went on to – the guys that they backed went on to be some of the worst atrocious dictators and torturers of our people. All right? And, yes, they were of our people. But that's no different than what you read and what happened in Egypt with the taskmasters over us.
Same thing.
All right? This is why I say ungodly Israelites are part of this group that we were reading about earlier, too.
Right.
Okay.
Hey, Cap, can I bring some of that real quick?
Bring it out.
All right. Give me Revelation 17, verse 10. All right. Real quick, just to touch on what Captain has said, that it's all just a show. It was America separating from Britain, but it was more so, okay, I'm now wearing the hat. The hat gets passed around, but it's all still the same policies and doctrines going around.
That's
Everyone
right.
still benefits from it, right? Revelation 17, verse 10.
Revelation chapter 17 and verse 10. And there are seven kings, five are fallen, and one it is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space.
So now when you read in the seven heads, it's referring to Greece, Rome, Spain, France, Germany, Great Britain. All right. And then it's talking about how all these kingdoms were able to reign for a supposition of time, but the one that came last was Great Britain, and it would only continue for a short space. Read on.
And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth and is of the seventh and goeth into perdition.
So the eighth is known as America. It came from the seven previous empires, but it's still the same exact thing. He's of the seven. Jump down to verse 13.
Verse 13.
This is the point right here.
These have one mind.
These have one mind. They're on one mind and one accord to push these things into the earth because they are all going to benefit from it nonetheless.
Right.
Read on.
These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast.
So it doesn't matter who's wearing the hat. It's still the same exact thing. They all benefit from it, from depleting our resources. All right. That's why she's still the great whore that sits upon many waters.
Right. And you know what's heavy about that? It's easy for people to understand that breakdown where it talks about how they're all one. They all have one mind.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about that, the Trinity, when it says that these three are one,
right.
It don't mean that they're all inside each other. It means that they're of that one mind. Okay.
Right.
So it says, on similar grounds, America has backed 18 attempts at regime change in Latin America since 1945, 10 of which succeeded and provided arms and technical assistance to military groups in the civil wars of Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and Nicaragua. And that's what we know of. That's what they're actually allowing to be published, right? The Monroe Doctrine was originally intended as an expression of resistance against European colonialism, rather than an excuse for American intervention in Latin America. But numerous such interventions have made Latin America suspicious of its northern neighbor. Good. Never trust thine enemy. Right? Mm-hmm. It's a rock. Venezuela's socialist leaders, Hugo Chavez and now Mr. Maduro, derive much of their political appeal from their resistance to American imperialism. It may have been rash for President Donald Trump to reiterate after Mr. Hidalgo's announcement that all options are on the table, as America considers its response to Mr. Maduro's resistance. Such a phrase is taken to refer to the possibility of military action. Though the importance of the Monroe Doctrine has faded since the end of the Cold War, some American conservatives still express admiration for it. Rex Tillerson, Mr. Trump's first Secretary of State, said the doctrine was as relevant today as the day it was written. Letting you know, right, that it was for their generations to continue.
Mm-hmm. Bro, that's why Isaiah says that they must prepare a slaughter for the iniquity of their fathers.
Yep.
Because in 1823, when that was first put into place, that wasn't for the benefit of them then, there, right now.
Right.
It was so, just like Captain said, for the generations to benefit from it.
Right, absolutely. So it says, it's as relevant today as it was written. That sentiment may not have brought much comfort to Latin American listeners. That's if they're listening at all. That's if they're listening at all. So that's the Monroe Doctrine, right? And we probably won't have time to fully cover free trade. We got about 10 minutes left, but I'm going to touch on it, all right? And then we'll set it up that I can go into the book more going into next week's lesson, Lord's will.
That Monroe Doctrine is it literally is exactly what we read in the book of Psalms about his words were smoother than butter, but that's exactly what that scripture is talking about.
Yes.
Man.
Absolutely. But I'm telling you, when I saw the article, actually the article came out 2 weeks ago. I was going to go over that last Sabbath, but I was sick, so I wasn't here. But that thing set me on fire. I was like, oof. I said, damn. I had remember hearing about it, but I never really read much into it.
Mm-hmm.
So the article prompted me. Like, I basically did the free subscription to The Economist. It's like an online. That's a good. I mean, I like it better than CNN. You get a lot. It's like the articles that come out of there are very thought provoking. You get like 6 free articles a month. They want you to subscribe if it's more. But I get like an email like every day with like the 5 top articles. And this is where I've been finding a lot of this information. So
wow.
I like the way they cover things. And the information they bring out. So that was from The Economist. So right?
Like the expose kind of thing.
Yeah. Like they're not necessarily overly concerned with reporting on Zion Williamson's broken shoe. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know.
It's a hot topic.
Hey, listen, man. I was a suffering Knicks fan for a lot of years. So they're talking about
suffering.
Like the Knicks may wind up with the worst record. So they got like, you know, a high chance of getting that first ball, you know. So. Gonna get that and Kevin Durant and let me stop.
Kyrie.
Ooh. Anyway, free trade. Let's talk a little bit about free trade. It says not to be confused with the free market or fair trade. Free trade. Free trade is a trade policy that does not restrict imports or exports. Doesn't restrict it. It is the idea of the free market as applied to international trade. So it's very much meaning how the countries in the world deal with each other with trade. In government, free trade is predominantly advocated by political parties that hold right-wing or liberal economic positions, while economically left-wing political parties generally support protectionism, the opposite of free trade. Now, I want to look up the other definition, which is a little less, so that you can see the simplified definition of it. Free trade is an international trade left to its natural course without tariffs, quotas, or other restrictions. Tariffs is the term you use for taxes when you're dealing with imports and exports. So now, it says politically, liberals like it because there's no tax on it, and conservatives like it because they raise tariffs and stuff. This is what you're seeing with Trump. He's putting all these tariffs and things on stuff with China. You're raising the price of things, you know, 25% tariffs or whatever. Most nations are today members of the World Trade Organization. They have numerous acronyms and abbreviations for all the signs of the Confederacy that they have. That Psalms 83, that's why I say the Monroe Doctrine is probably the foundation of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have all these other things like, you know, the United Nations, the 10 Common Markets, the Organization of American States. All of that falls under it that we were reading. So you have the World Trade Organization. And the World Trade Organization is an intergovernmental organization that is concerned with the regulation of international trade between nations. The WTO officially commenced on January 1st, 1995 under the Marrakesh Agreement. I got to read into that agreement, signed by 124 nations on April 15th, 1994. And it says it replaces, hold on, I want to pull this up. Oh gosh, what's going on here? It lost my thing. Okay, here we go. It replacing the General Agreement of Tariffs and Trade, the GATT, which commenced in 1948. It is the largest international economic organization in the world, the World Trade Organization. And most people haven't even heard of it. I mean, you know, Esau's sitting there and they're like, we know about this. You're ignorant ass, don't you know?
Right.
All right. And its purpose is supposedly the reduction of tariffs and other barriers to trade. It has 164 member states. That means 164 countries.
Damn.
All right. Its budget is 197.2 million Swiss francs, approximately 209 million in U.S. dollars in 2018. It has 640 staff members. So it's a pretty big deal. I'm not going to digress too much into that, but that's another thing that's probably worth looking at. And you compare that with the scriptures and you'll see a lot of this craftiness coming out. So most nations are today members of the World Trade Organization multilateral trade agreements. Free trade is additionally exemplified by the European Economic Area and the Mercosur, which have established open markets. However, most governments still impose some protectionist policies that are intended to support local employment, such as applying tariffs to imports or subsidies to exports. Governments may also restrict free trade to limit exports of natural resources. Other barriers that may hinder trade include import quotas, taxes, and non-tariff barriers such as regulatory legislation. There is a broad consensus among economists that protectionism has a negative effect on economic growth and economic welfare, while free trade and the reduction of trade barriers has a positive effect on economic growth. However, liberalization of trade can cause significant and unequally distributed losses and the economic dislocation of workers and import competing sectors. So this is where a little bit of the book comes into play and free trade and how it impacts it. All right. So we got about 4 minutes before we got to start wrapping. But I'll read again a little bit of the I had read some of this on a prior show. But I'll read a little bit about it. Oh, no, that's the wrong page. Here we go. And then we'll pick it up, Lord's will, next week. So we mentioned Ulysses S. Grant as one of the people that was down with the Monroe Doctrine. So this is a quote from him in the beginning of this chapter. It says, after two centuries, England has found it convenient to adopt free trade because it thinks that protection can no longer offer it anything. My knowledge of our country leads me to believe that within 200 years, when America has gotten out of protection, all that it can offer, it too will adopt free trade. So when it can't bully and stuff anymore, this is and the Monroe Doctrine laid the foundation for that. Latin America was where neoliberal globalization assumed its most pernicious form, with an unprecedented concentration of wealth and power into the hands of a small minority because of free trade. The free trade doesn't benefit except it does. It only benefits the parties that it wants to benefit, because who sits at the head of all this, right?
That's right.
The United States. And that's what you need to understand. So let me read a little bit of this intro and then I'll jump down here. Well, I had read that with NAFTA. I'll read this first paragraph. It says, during the second half of the 20th century, a momentous shift occurred in American economic life. U.S. transitional firms searching for cheap labor and maximum profit shifted much of their manufacturing to third world countries, especially to Latin America. As part of the shift, the U.S. government led a worldwide campaign for free trade because it would benefit them. It pressed developing nations to lower tariffs on imported goods. And this goes back to where I said Latin America is the breast of the world as far as the natural resources that it provides to the world. Most of the world's wood comes from there, all right? A lot of it's iron ore and things like that. Venezuela, we've established, has the largest known oil reserves in the world. All right. Not the only, but they have the largest of this. When you read The End of Poverty, they had the precious metal mines, even coal mines, diamond mines, all that stuff like that. Iron ore. It's not just gold and silver, but things like lead. All that stuff is needed for them to create. I mean, look at, you know, the skyscrapers and buildings and structures and bridges and infrastructure and everything like that, right? So you would think they'd be wealthy, but no, because free trade came in.
That's right.
And it created an advantageous position primarily for them. There's no win-win in negotiations. There's always concessions. And somebody always winds up, right, because you only agree to things if it makes sense to you, and then it depends on where you sit, right, as far as where you're going to sell that stuff to. And, you know, the United States basically got their hands so deep into Latin America, you know, from the 1800s on, that by the time all this rolled around, they were seen as that international police, as Big Daddy. They lifted up the head, right? And these people believed it. And, Jen, remember what we read in the article? They supported 18 coups. 10 of them were successful. So they had these guys in their pocket, is what's being said. Hey, you owe us, right?
Wow.
And you're going to do favorable trade deals no matter what the cost. So it says, U.S. transitional firms searching for cheap labor and maximum profit shifted much of their manufacturing to third world countries. All right. As part of the shift, the U.S. government led a worldwide campaign for free trade. It pressed developing nations to lower tariffs, which would have benefited them. They'd be more successful. They wouldn't be third world countries, right? Because now they're not charging tariffs on this stuff. But what's interesting, when you watch the movie, the documentary, The End of Poverty, they talk about how it benefits the world for them to export it cheaply. But then the tariffs are not beneficial when they import back the refined products. And this is the crux of where free trade gets messed up. I'm going to wrap it up with these last sentences. So it says, it pressed developing nations to lower tariffs on imported goods and to create new export-oriented manufacturing zones, largely to serve the needs of those foreign firms. So it was this cronyism and this thing of let's get each other wealthy, let's work this thing out, and it's going to benefit those people more than it is going to benefit the home country as far as that. And it all started with that Monroe Doctrine, because what did it tell you? It came in at a time when they were very uncertain, because while they were conquered, they were still very dependent on their conquerors.
That's right.
And it put them in a position where, hey, we're going to help you and let you be independent, not help you and occupy you. And they fell for it. And then this is where you have this convoluted effect today. And there's so much more that goes into it. So, Lord's Will, next week we'll talk more about the free trade and economics as a tool, economics as the mark of the beast, with following its policies and its sin, and how they use that to police the world today. All right. So we got 10 seconds here to sign off on the radio side. So that's the Native Latin and Black Lost History Show. And with that, we say shalom.
Shalom.
Shalom.